Soviet comedies. I'm doing Soviet comedies all month.
Okay. What era?
Oh, 1920s. Okay. Lenin's new economic policy period. So we get to talk about humor, and we also get to talk about rent control and unionization of domestic workers.
It's so, so funny. I can imagine the punchline. Your rent's going down, going up. Yes. actually, probably not going anywhere. I guess in film class we just always studied the more serious Soviet works. I didn't know there were a lot of Soviet comedies. I didn't know that 20s Soviets had a lot of sense of humor. So.
Oh, they've got a wonderful sense of humor. That's the funny thing.
Of course they would. They're people.
yeah. No, I actually, I would say they're actually some of the best rom-coms of the silent era.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So they're like, because I love the way Soviets do romance, where it's just like spot on realistic. It's not, it's not like, you know, overblown, and but it's romantic enough to where you can go, aw, you know.
I have not gone, aw, for a Soviet film in a long time. Although most of the Soviet films I see are like post-Stalin, Khrushchev. So they're pretty stark, you know, trying to come to terms with that whole ordeal. So anyway, we're not going to go into that ordeal.
Yes.
So hi, Fritzy. And haven't heard from Jill yet. Hello, Jill. So
hello.
Hi. So we have two, how do we describe you? You two this week. Would you say, I know that we have the whole beehive thing going, like queen bees, killer bees, just people?
Feisty ladies.
Feisty ladies, okay.
I like to say I'm just a blogger with an opinion.
Okay.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all, yeah, and we all have our buttons too. But so anyway, I brought you all together and I'll introduce you so people don't know. You're both new to the podcast. So we go in alphabetical order. So you all are close. I have to, I know my alphabet. That's the one thing I know. So Fritzy Kramer, you're the blogger for Movies Silently. You've been doing this a long, long time. I think it's got to be not 10 years, but a long time, right?
Yeah, it's going on 10 years.
Wow,
This March.
Wow, yeah. Awesome. Criterion Cast also is 10 years. Now, I haven't been part of that for the whole time, but we're about to, I don't know the date, but yeah, cheers.
Oh, congratulations, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you mostly blog classic movies, not mostly, your blog is Movie Silently, so you pretty much exclusively blog classic silent films. And I know you, you're not like... You know, nothing past 1930, but do you want to just give like a description of your blog and what you do?
Oh, I like to take kind of a friendly, light approach to silent films and make them fun. My main area of interest is The Average, which doesn't sound terribly romantic, but I'm absolutely fascinated by what the average film goer experienced. Mm-hmm. So I watch a lot of programmers and I do step out a little bit. I'll do modern silent films. I'll do...
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, and I'll do films with silent stars after the silence to show that they didn't just all disappear because they were embarrassed about their voices or something. Mm-hmm. And I'll do movies about silent movies. And I do silent era recipes from allegedly from the stars. And
okay.
For better or worse, I make them and I taste them. And we've had some winners and we've had some real misses.
I haven't really even thought about the recipe completionism, but that's pretty awesome. So, and we have Jill Blake. So Jill, I guess, okay. So TCM employee, you blog at Retroset and former Filmstruck. You did the Streamline blog, so I'll let you say it. I can.
Yeah, so I'm a freelance writer for TCM.
Okay.
So I do programming articles for them. I also write scripts for their on-air hosts, and I did work for Filmstruck as a contractor for Streamline blog. I also did the Scene on Filmstruck commentaries that they offered as part of special features. I also did a series of intros for them, on-camera intros, on Cary Grant.
I missed them.
Yeah.
And they're gone.
They were pretty good.
I bet.
They are... gone. I'm hoping that I'll get the files to those, and I'm pretty sure I'll be able to upload those to like YouTube or something so they're available.
I wondered about that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping. They've put some of the special features out there, so I'm hoping they'll allow that. And then, as you said, I also co-founder and editor of the Retro Set. It's, primarily classic film, but we also touch on, like a retro culture, television, music, that sort of thing. And I
Awesome.
run that site with Wade Sheeler.
Any recipes? It
We
might
have
make
done a
sense.
couple. We
Okay.
have done a couple, but Fritzy, I will continue to let her lead the way, because there's some real scary stuff out there.
Film recipe blogging. That's
So
the next thing.
I like to read them, and I like to go, ooh, and then just let some other brave soul do that for all of us.
I'm not going to get into Criterion recipes. Of course, Criterion Filmstruck was, I guess, yeah, R.I.P. Filmstruck was our thing, but yeah, I mean, what do we have to work for? Work with Babbitt's Feast and Sallow. It's two different sides of the equation. But well, in all seriousness, Jill, I know. So we kind of already decided to keep the show positive, but I just, on behalf of everybody, since you were connected with Filmstruck, I think everybody would say thank you. And I don't know if you're connected with our communities online. I know Film Twitter is this big, massive thing, which I think we'll get into. But in our social media forums, we have some big groups in Facebook. Everybody was, very grateful, very devastated, of course. I think it was. The rug was pulled out from everybody, but also they just really appreciated you all. And I know that Scott and I know Penelope worked on the Criterion. There's just a whole list of names. Actually, you had a really nice Twitter thread thanking a lot of them.
Their whole staff, they're all movie lovers, and so the development of that product was coming from the right place. And ultimately, I think that's why it failed, because they weren't, at least the people that were programming it and putting it out there, money was not at the forefront of that. And we see that that's not what the higher ups wanted. But no, the Filmstruck staff, they were great. They brought in people, like me, who, I'm not a film historian in that. I didn't go to school for that. I'm not a published author, which I'm hoping to remedy that
Oh,
at some
good.
point.
Good. You should.
But they brought in people like me to share our thoughts, and I really loved that leveled playing field there, where it wasn't, they had a mixture of the experts as well as, ordinary folk. And I'm very grateful to them, and I know that they really appreciate all the love that they got while they were still in service and afterward.
Yeah, there has been an outpouring. And I do like how you put it that you're a self-taught film writer. I think, is that the way you phrased it? And really, I think, sure, I've taken some film classes and, but I've dabbled in academia, but I think mostly my education has been watching movies and thinking about them, reading blogs, reading books. I think that's the way to do it. And school is 4 years, and really, when you take out English and math, it's not all that much. So yeah. Again, thank you, and we'll get into Filmstruck a little. Well, actually, let's just get into Filmstruck. All right. And I don't want to get in trouble, Jill. So bite your tongue. So we didn't see it coming. It was and you mentioned the money part. Now I don't think that mattered. I don't think it was. It didn't matter whether it was profitable or unprofitable. And they haven't really even said whether they were. They mentioned we've heard discussion about the number of subscribers, but I think that the corporate decision was not was how much money like the upside potential of Filmstruck was not what they were seeing for this new group. Do you agree? Okay, I'll take that silence as silence is golden, as they say. Hi, Fritzy. You wanna chime
Hi.
in?
Yeah, Fritzy, you
Well,
take it.
okay. Well, Jason Bailey actually wrote a really good article. I don't remember which
Oh.
site it was for, and he was digging trying to find the numbers and couldn't find any. They just aren't releasing, profits or anything like that. So when people say, "Oh, it was hemorrhaging money," this and that, they're just pulling that out of thin air
And
because,
I might have just done that too. I might have just read it somewhere. So I'll have to dig up that Jason Bailey. I like Jason a lot, and see what he said. I'll put that in the notes for people that want to read
He
it. So.
was one of the only film writers who understood what was going on from the get-go in terms of the language in the press releases and how all of the everybody was trying to make the news positive. Oh, especially when the Criterion Channel said, "Okay, we're going to have a streaming service," and that is fantastic. So everything I'm about to say is not in criticism of them. They have to protect their brand and their product, and I
For sure.
want to see them succeed. But the language surrounding that announcement and the support that came from WarnerMedia, there was a lot there that a lot of people did not. They took that press release at face value. Jason did not. And so he wrote two, I believe, two articles for FlavorWire that really everyone needs to read.
I will look for those. I didn't read those, unfortunately. I read a lot of articles that week because I think we were all trying to make sense of it. And yeah, the press releases were difficult. You could read some tea leaves. You could, yeah. Sometimes they came off. Sometimes a little questionable, I'd say. But I'm just an outsider looking in, and I don't see inside the building. So, yes. So anyway, we do put together a little outline, and we thought it'd be like a template to talk about. And I labeled this topic "Life After Filmstruck," but the thing is, I don't think there's really anything like Filmstruck out there. And we just lost Fandor too, which is,
Oh, gosh.
yeah. So Fritzy, I'll just ask, like, as a consumer, how did you consume Filmstruck?
My main interest in Filmstruck was getting access to the Warner Library because they have a lot of movies that have maybe aired on TCM but have never been released on home video or were only released on like VHS and Laserdisc. And so this it was like this great opportunity like to see these things that were either it wasn't profitable enough to release them on home video, or there were some kind of copyright tangles that prevented them from ever being released. And like, for example, they had a couple of Howard Hughes silent films that he produced, and those are, have never been released on home media at all. So your only opportunity to see them now is to kind of wait for TCM to cycle through with them. And so that was my, and of course, it's nice to just sort of pop on a classic, right? You're tired and you're like, "Oh, Thin Man," that kind of thing.
Comfort food, classic film comfort food.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I think a lot of people, when they talk about fine film and classic film, sometimes think they always have to think and that it's kind of a chore. And with Filmstruck, to be honest, I used it as relaxation.
And I think that same here. I think the curations too. Sometimes, well, first off, Jill, I don't know. I don't think you were involved with the programming, were you? But
No,
you
no.
obviously were in, at the table, I guess. You saw what was going on. But there was so much so fast and so much great stuff that it was nice to just see. Oh, hey, there's this series. I had not even thought about that. Let me like The Thin Man. Of course, I've seen The Thin Man, and but if people hadn't, a lot of people, in fact, on our social media groups, people discovered The Thin Man. They're like, oh man, these guys are drink a ton and they are hilarious, and they are.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize that the same they had Filmstruck staff that they hired when they launched the service, but a vast majority of the people work for TCM.
Right.
So, all the programming, all of that was done by the same staff that programs TCM. So you're getting that attention to detail that we get, that we enjoy with the network. What I loved about Filmstruck is, especially after they acquired, I mean, it was terrific before they got the Warner catalog when the
Right, yeah.
Warner Archive streaming went away. But what I loved about that was that, yeah, they had Casablanca, which would reel in someone who, maybe has seen it 100 times, but it's that ease of access, right? But then they would see all the related titles to that. And so maybe that would lead them to, Ingrid Bergman's work, with Rossellini, or maybe, something rare with Bogart from the 30s before he made Casablanca. So I liked that. And that's really what TCM does too. They program, a big hit at 8 p.m. and then at 10 p.m. they're going to possibly show you something that's completely a buried treasure. So I liked that combination of programming of those tried and true classics with the rarer stuff. And for us, a lot of it's not rare. I've seen
Sure, yeah,
These movies a million times, but I still want to be able to share them with my family or my friends, and sometimes I, like Fritzy said, I just want to put something on that's familiar. The last film I watched on Filmstruck was Shop Around the Corner. I've
Oh,
seen
that's a
that
great one.
movie 100 times. Now, I didn't know it was going to be my last movie. I had grand plans, but life and, being a mom and all that kind of stupid stuff. I love my family. But they interfered with my Filmstruck viewing.
Was not questioning your matriarchal sense of obligation, but
I put it on because I wanted to feel good. And
Yeah, you can question my patriarchy all the time. I'm used to that.
Believe me, I do. But I love, one thing that I talked about a lot on the blog, and on Twitter, there were movies that we take for granted. So I used William Wyler's The Best Years of Our Lives as an
Oh, that's a
example.
beautiful film.
And this movie is one that is many consider it's one of the greatest films ever made. And it's definitely kind of I think the banner film for that generation, for World War II veterans, kind of held up as that. And it's a movie that I've seen, 50, 100 times. It's a favorite. And it's a movie that airs a lot. It's on Blu-ray. It's readily available. And I realized when I did some blog posts about it and I was tweeting about it, how many people hadn't seen it. And so they had added that onto Filmstruck in the last like 2 months, I think. And I got about 30 people that I saw that had interacted with me to see that movie for the first time. And so I think that, there was this conversation about, well, don't freak out, people. All of, so
Right.
many of these movies are available, but
Yeah, they're
not
not.
everybody can, they can't go down to the video store, because in most places there isn't one. We're very lucky in Atlanta to have Videodrome, but there's no Redbox is not going to have it.
No, definitely not.
And a lot of people can't shell out 15, $20 for a Blu-ray, and they're certainly not going to do it on a blind buy. They're not crazy
Oh,
like we
sure.
are. We spend hundreds of dollars on movies we've never seen. Not that I've ever done that,
Right. No,
but
they're
not
not like I've moved 20 boxes of movies today.
right.
So
And we say that the library has it, but not all libraries. And so,
And usually with the libraries, the catalog is based on what. Well, that's I actually just watched the documentary about the New York Public Library, and I think they're conscious about having titles that aren't in demand, but if somebody a few years from now is going to look for it, the library has it. Not all libraries look that way. They don't see themselves as archives, as
Exactly. And
resources.
And we have a really, I mean, you know, I live in Atlanta. We are very fortunate to have several library systems at our disposal. Plus, we do have, you know, Georgia Tech, Georgia State, and Emory. Emory has an exceptional film program. Plus, you've got University of Georgia at Athens, about an hour away. So we do have quite a bit of access. But even in our county's library system, there might be one copy,
Yeah,
and that's
and
it.
some if somebody's
And then
reserved
once that
it, yeah.
gets exactly, or once it gets damaged, and again, you got to know to look for it. So what I liked about it is that yeah, we shouldn't be relying upon a streaming service to get us access to every single film, or I should say, rely on them to be our archive or to save film or whatever. But somebody's going to get drawn in for their thing is foreign film, or their thing is, you know, Humphrey Bogart, or their thing is silence, or you know, indie 80s
There's
indie
a
films,
lot
you
for
know,
everybody.
whatever. And they get in there and they see, oh, what is this movie starring, you know, Dana Andrews? I saw him in Airport 77 or whatever he was in.
Not that that's
So
usually the Dana Andrews gateway drug, but whatever it takes. But actually,
or
but a lot of people would discover film and through these titles. So yeah, it's an inexpensive service. You get a trial. It costs nothing. You watch Casablanca, and then you get in maybe some edgy deep noir that makes you think. And I'm not saying that Casablanca doesn't. I think Casablanca is a fine film. It's just, you know,
absolutely.
I mean, there's a lot of those. I think actually, The Best Years of Our Lives is a great example of a movie about processing the war. I mean, I think for its time, it was really the movie about processing the horror that our veterans went through during war. And but that can lead to other post-war films that what were you going to say, Fritzie?
And also it lowers the barrier, because, like, for example, they were offering to stream Mario Peixoto's Lumiche, and
Yeah, it's
which
great.
is like $120 box set retail, you know, and that's a huge ask. You know, hey, here's this independent Brazilian film, it's silent, there's no one famous in it, he only made one movie, there are no professional actors, spend $120 on this box set, you know. And it was nice to be able to say, check it out on Filmstruck.
Right, for $9.99 or, yeah, I mean, I think. You know, some the comment the word privileged has been thrown around, and honestly, I think that it's just sure, it was a privileged service, but I think that when you know we're in 2018, about to turn into 2019, when I was looking through the Filmstruck list, a lot of times I would just think, what a time it is to be alive, because I've been a film buff for 20, 30 years. And you click a button and you have the greats from cinema, but not only that, you have the Limache. That's a great example. So I love that movie. That's a fantastic movie. I mean, of course it's on Criterion, so I would have watched it eventually, but a lot of similar movies like that were curated. I was bummed. I lost I didn't The day the announcement came out, I could never get back on Filmstruck because I had press access. So yeah, they shat on their press. Well, the thing is that it expired. They gave short term, like I think it was like 6 months or something. I'm not saying they shat on their press. They did. They were very, very kind. In fact, extremely kind. But yeah, so it was like, oh, I hadn't re-upped in time, so it was gone.
They just closed that door.
And if you could look at
You
like,
should have let me know.
I should have. You would have hooked me up. But yeah. So life after Filmstruck, and you know, you mentioned so you have to pay $120 for a box set to see this obscure Brazilian film. I've just been looking at some popular films just on the Just Watch app, and actually, unfortunately, it's not updated. A lot of times, it says Filmstruck, and I'm just like, fuck. But sometimes, sure, you can rent them from Amazon. A lot of times, it's not the right, not as good of a print, or it's, you know, especially films that have been in public domain, and that's been a conversation. You know, everybody can put out whatever print has been out there for the last 80 something years, and you know, unless it's the one that came out from, say, Janus Films, you're, you know, it's it's watchable, but has issues. But yes, you can spend $3.99 20 times a month to maybe watch some of these, even the TCM films. So yeah, well, now Life After Film Struck, I guess it's been what, 2 weeks? Oh, no, not a week and a
It's been a
half?
week.
Yeah, wow. Well, I guess it's
A
been.
week. It went dark. 9 a.m. What was the date? The 30th?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's funny is, as I remember, in our community, people were like talking about the last movie, and actually, it was kind of sentimental. It was kind of sweet. People put on, it's kind of like, I don't know, this is dark, but where do you want to be on when you die? Do you want to be on the beach watching the sunrise? It's very dark. Although there's been some dark stuff this week. We're all dying, by the way. Our materials are just decomposing. But people were, wanted to. We're talking about what's their last film, and so people would did that. They had these little film struck final celebrations, and then they woke up the next morning, and it was still there. And they're like, "Oh shit, maybe they changed their mind." And then, yeah. So 9 o'clock,
No.
9 o'clock.
They kept that under wraps. I mean, I didn't even know. I had been told that it wasn't going to be like a midnight on the 29th kind of thing, but it was still nebulous as to when it would go down. And then somebody on Twitter who worked for Filmstruck, whose last day was yesterday, tweeted out that it was 9 a.m. Eastern on the 30th. And so that incredibly generous individual gave people a nice evening to enjoy. I mean, I know a couple of friends who stayed up all night, which I think
I
is
think that's
hysterical, and it's awesome,
It's great,
you know.
yeah. I mean, I think the loyalty of the fan base and yeah, just and it was a lot of people too. So yeah, it was very moving.
And then I logged in at like 8:55 and just, went through the app and watch. I mean, it was like sitting next to someone when the life supports pulled. I held Filmstruck's hand,
You should have just
and then
sat
it
down
just,
and played. You're the band. You're the Titanic
yeah.
band. It's what you
Totally.
are.
And so I just, and so I was like, okay. And I was clicking on stuff, and then all of a sudden it said, content unavailable. And I was like, oh God.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's it's.
Oh, well.
So it's been
She
a.
was a beaut. She was a real
She
beaut.
was a beaut, and I just hope now a lot of the support and the press. There was a lot of press, a lot more than I expected. The whole joke is that this was a niche service, but a lot of people celebrated all of these directors. Some of the biggest directors, the biggest directors working today. Some of the biggest Warner's directors, and actually, I think they may have had more influence than us little us little plebeians. But so, Fritzy, since Filmstruck, what have you been replacing it with? What have you been watching? Or
Well,
is there?
I would have said Fandor.
Yeah.
I would have said Fandor, but we just had the announcement that Fandor it laid off almost its entire staff, and it's
Yeah, can I just stab myself in the gut right now? Is that appropriate? It's that was crushing too, and I've known the not known, but been connected to the Fandor people for quite some time. I was talking with one of them last night, and who's having some issue. I mean, you lose your job; it's not
Oh,
fun.
yeah.
I don't know their situation if they had noticed, but they were generous enough, and maybe it was a little opportunistic, but they offered annual subscriptions to Filmstruck subscribers for like half the price. And they actually had a pretty good library, like 4,000 films, and good films too. I'm sure a lot of indies, foreigns, not nearly the caliber. They didn't have Casablanca, but
But
yeah.
their silence were second to none.
Were they? Okay.
Yeah, their selection of silence was absolutely bar none the best. And they just had this huge variety. They dealt with independent labels. They always had really good content, and their search function was fantastic. You could search by country, genre, year, and like all at once with these little sliders, and it was amazing. I watched so many silence thanks to them. Their catalog, they also had some things that had screened at the that the San Francisco Silent Film Festival, but hadn't been released on home video ever. So, you know, it's I miss them. I'm very this is actually,
It's a tough week.
yeah, for my watching, Fandor is actually more serious than Filmstruck. Like, I loved Filmstruck, but Fandor was, you know, my main. It was the one I would not let go. I would let go of Netflix and
Right.
Hulu and
It's your
anything else
wheelhouse.
before Fan.
Yeah, and Fandor, I think, is harder to replace because I think some of that, like what you're describing, a lot of these obscure silents, you know, the and you've done a lot personally. I've seen through the years to bring a lot of them to the light of day, and so have, you know, Flickr Alley, Lobster Films, even Kino, even although, you know, they're all businesses and they have to make money, but yeah, so where are you gonna, and there might not be an answer, but where will you look for these films now?
Well, I know a lot of people say Canopy, but that's through your public library system. And if your public library system doesn't have it, which mine does not, you're up a creek. And there are services like the National Film Board of Canada has movies, but they aren't available in Australia. And so there's licensing issues.
Sure.
The BFI isn't available in America, a lot of their stuff. The Library of Congress has some pretty good stuff, but not with scores always. I mean, I appreciate it most definitely. There's their online screening room, but you know, it's the simple fact is that these archives, it's really expensive to put together a good silent presentation.
Hugely, yeah.
And yeah, and they have to figure out where to put their money, and I don't blame them one bit. The National Film Preservation Foundation has a screening room with probably maybe 200 or 300 titles. And those are really high quality. They have s professional scores. But again, one of the problems with missing Filmstruck is that a lot of movies are in copyright jail, and the only way to get to them is through these like official licensed services. So yeah, there's nothing really in streaming, but fortunately, with Fandor and Filmstruck both, I was able to figure out what I was going to buy and increase my DVD and Blu-ray collection as much as I could afford. And so I do have a pretty decent collection in my own right, but still, you know.
Oh, yeah, I've always been a an advocate for physical media, and that actually, you know, a couple weeks ago it seemed when the Criterion announcement came out, the Criterion Channel, it seemed that maybe there was hope after all. But that seems to be, you know, just buy discs if you can afford them, and I have a ton. So back to Fandor, pretty abrupt announcement. Of course, we don't know anything, but I kind of think maybe Criterion bought them. I don't
I
know.
would hope.
I
What
would.
about if what if this is going to be rolled into this new Warner, you know, thing? I'm just saying,
So
you know.
no, I, you
there
know.
was this Paramount decision a little while ago. I'm just saying. I mean, really, if you know your film history, it seems like we are seeing vertical integration again, a little bit. And I'm not going anti-capitalist or anything, but it does seem like it's not in the best interests of us, the consumers. So, yeah. So, one thing I hope, actually, and we kind of chatted privately. I hope that Charles Cohen may have bought it. Now, I don't love his library. I mean, a lot of the types of films he releases are my t you know foreign art house, that sort of thing. And I have quite a few, but a lot of them are like lesser films. Like, for example, you know, Hitchcock, he has Jamaica Inn, so, you know, go to town with Jamaica Inn. It's fine, but you know, it's not Vertigo, you know.
Come on, there's a whole fandom on Jamaica Inn. You know it
I'm
exists.
sure that, yeah, there's a probably a
Watch out.
Jamaica. I'm gonna get Jamaica
You are going to
Inn
get
hate.
so much
No,
hate mail from the Jamaica Inn
I'm used
fans.
to it. It's fine. But the thing is, so Charles Cohen is an interesting guy, and I don't know if you know much about him, but he's a billionaire hedge fund guy the kind of guy that, I think gets a lot of grief, but he has basically, but he's a film buff and he made it his life's mission to preserve film. And so this week he just bought Landmark Theaters, which is a big deal. There's one in Atlanta, the Midtown Art Cinema is Landmark, so you have some Cohen in your town. And Cohen Media, they have an Amazon channel. They actually do have quite a bit. They bought all the a lot of the Merchant Ivory collection. So it would make sense for him to get into streaming. Fandor has this platform. So I'm, although the thing is, that's streaming, exhibition, home media. That's, and then he does acquisitions at festivals. So that's vertical integration. That's, yeah. So, but it's the good kind. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if they're doing what we want them to do, vertical
Well,
integration,
if
you
it's
know.
in the interest of cinephilia or not
Yeah.
cinephilia, but just the keeping cinema going, shedding light to more obscure films, curating films even. I think that's what we miss from Filmstruck, and I think that was actually very new. Even Fandor, I love Fandor, but Fandor, when you log into the app, it's like 10 squares. Now it was very, I love the visual design, but it was hard to find stuff. And Netflix is just like a bunch of scroll bars. Amazon is Magnificent Mrs. Maisel. I'm sure it's a good show, but seriously, I don't need to keep on hearing about it.
So you speak, so kind of getting into the curation portion of the, I mean, access is very important. We know
Yes.
this, but curation, I think, is just as much
Extremely.
as access. And so someone called my attention. This was in the dying days of Filmstruck. Now, maybe it has been corrected, but I highly doubt it. But the last I checked a few days ago on Amazon Prime, they had It's a Wonderful Life available. And the version, because there's apparently versions of this film, the version that was offered default on all the, you're searching for holiday movies is the colorized version, but it was put up as like the regular, this is the version, right? So if you dig deep, so if you know that It's a Wonderful Life was released in black and white, you would know, okay, this is bullshit. I'm gonna go find the real version. Most, maybe a lot of people wouldn't know that,
Sure, yeah,
right?
and we take it for
Okay.
granted, yeah, that.
So you go searching for the real version, and it says It's a Wonderful Life in parentheses, black and white version, which, indicates that this is, lesser or it's an alternate version from the real colorized. But the kicker, the director, he has all the information, the director, unknown.
Oh, who could it be? Some
Unknown.
obscure niche guy.
I love Unknown's work. It's phenomenal.
Brilliant.
Good old Unknown.
Alan Smithy. Well, and I remember looking for a relatively obscure Hitchcock, a 30s Hitchcock that I think now it may have come out elsewhere. I can't remember. And finding a version, actually, it was on Amazon, and watching it, and it was really unwatchable because it was just, and that is so. We talk about film materials; they do degrade, and that's why we restore them. And so, and I think that's what is great about Janus, TCM. You see, well, I don't know how much TCM does restoration. Jill, do you know?
I do know that they partner with like Eastman House. Like they are TCM is a big reason why the Egyptian Theater, it's a Cinematheque in Los Angeles, has nitrate projection capabilities now. Is TCM worked with Eastman House and with oh, I'm drawing a blank, with Film Preservation. No.
Film Foundation? Well,
Film
that's
Foundation
okay.
of Scorsese's
Yeah, that's Film
group. Yeah, I'm having them
Foundation. Yeah,
film.
that's okay.
They all kind of work together to make that happen. So I know that TCM, I don't know what the inner workings of that, but I know that they have been instrumental in some restoration and in making film more accessible. The nitrate stuff is, because I believe that the theater, I think it's the Dryden in Rochester that does nitrate. They started that nitrate film festival, I think 6 years ago, I want to say. But there was really no legal, I know some people in Atlanta that, you know, do some nitrate screening, but,
back alley nitrate.
Anyways,
speakeasy.
But they, So, but they made sure that they did it the right way. They got it installed, the projectors installed at the Egyptian. So they have been very, instrumental in that. And, but even if, you know, let's just say they weren't involved in those efforts, just broadcasting the films, that's enough to draw attention to, and the people that they have on, you know, their guest programmers and things.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is enough. And then they are going above and beyond. And I hope that it stays that way.
Well, and I think that's, so it's viewership. So of course, TCM is a, is a company. You get a paycheck from them sometimes, I assume, I hope.
I do.
Good. And so, there's also UCLA Film Archive. There are, some universities do. There's a lot of restoration. The foreign ones, the Bologna one, countless. And people are doing great work. A lot of times they're doing this for the purpose of exhibition. And sure, it might just be for the, a 2 a.m. TCM screening, which I would see it on my DVR and be like, oh, wow, this movie. And oh, wow, it's a great print. And actually, a lot of times they're for home media release. And I think we're seeing this more and more, the restorations for home media and streaming. So, yeah, I think that we need the market. And so that means, that can mean the televised market. I know cable's kind of up in the air a little bit, but there needs to be some sort of commerce. Film is a business, I think. And
oh, absolutely.
Preservation takes a lot of money. And I'm on the board for a nonprofit, and all we talk about is money. But we are trying to serve a culture. We're trying to, I guess, inform people about the arts. So our hearts are in the right place, but we need money. And so does Martin Scorsese. Well,
right. And you know, there's been this argument about what, you know, what should we preserve? Who should be responsible for that? And this is why you gotta hook people in on the big name stuff, okay? And then
there you go.
You do a bait and switch, and you throw at the rare stuff to them, and you make them care. And who's responsible to? We are all responsible.
Absolutely,
for it. We are all consuming this art. We are responsible to see to its protection. So. And so how do we do that? I hate to say this, but we buy the films
when they come out. Vote with our wallet.
Exactly. We buy them whether they're released from Warner Brothers or whether they're released from Fox, or we buy them from Flickr Alley. So we support it all. Mm-hmm. And some of us can't do that, but we can support by, you know, going and seeing a rep screening if we have that, even if it's just a little podunk theater in the middle of nowhere that's showing, you know, The King and I, you know, on a DVD. That we need to support that all the way down the chain.
Yep.
And then that will turn into, I mean, I'm not saying that magically money's going to come out of nowhere, but we have to be supporting all of that and showing that, okay, there's an interest in this.
There has to be a market established for it. And the same goes for streaming services. So we don't know. Right now we're kind of in this really hazy, foggy area. We're like a 40s noir film is right now, as far as the streaming media is right now. Like we could, it could just get stabbed and knocked out forever. Although, you know, there's the code. So there's going to be a happy ending.
Well, there's money to be made. They know that.
There absolutely is
money to be made. And so they will find a way. And it sounds like with this super duper, you know, I'm wearing a cape and fighting. I mean, that's what we're getting in this.
So the Warner, you know, thing is
amazing
what...
thing. Yes, the Warner thing. We'll just call it the Warner thing. But it's going to be tiered.
The thing is, it is. Yeah. And the thing is, they have such a great catalog. So, and we'd hope that they're responsible with that catalog, but that's really that's the attraction for us
But
is
they're going to price it at every single level,
Yep.
and because they said, "Oh, wait a minute, this $10 a month, no.
Right.
This is too cheap. We can make a lot more," and they will. I mean,
They will. You're right.
I don't think that I'm sure that a lot of the movies, especially those main Warner titles, I don't know anything. I think they will be available in some form. I think it's just too good for them to pass up. But my concern at this point is the curation, because they've completely cut the people out who were doing that.
And
And so,
that's the argument, is you need people that are informed. So whether they have 8 degrees, whether they are a self-taught film enthusiast, you need somebody's hands on it in order to curate. I don't think we're at the point where we can curate with an algorithm yet. I don't. It's not working with, at least with me, for Netflix, 'cause like or Amazon.
Oh yeah.
They
I
just want me
mean
to watch Adam Sandler all the time.
well, I mean they would, I watch a lot of probably like a lot of people, I don't typically watch movies on Netflix. My daughter uses it for My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic. I watch Schitt's Creek and Great British Bake
I just
Off,
started
and
that. So yeah.
oh, it's so great. We should do a whole show on Schitt's Creek.
Oh,
But
I'm still in the first season, so I got to catch up.
but I do have I do watch some movies on there, and Other Side of the Wind comes out, and I'm having to dig. So,
So that's where the algorithm worked for me, because it was right front and center.
really?
Same with Buster Scruggs. So yeah, but the thing is, that's just it's there and it's gone. And you watch that, you watch the documentary, right? All right, that's the end of Orson Welles. So what? Let's
I
watch
mean, you
Friends.
would have. I wish that. Yeah, I mean, I wish that they had had his entire filmography. I mean, or okay, you just watched this. Well, here's Amberson's.
So hopefully that even though Filmstruck was gone way too soon, it was amazing. Hopefully it at least proved that there is demand, and that something will come out of it. So and maybe Warners will come to their senses. I can be a cynic sometimes, and I work for a public company and I love them. They're great, but I do see that side of business too. And so yeah. Wishful thinking. I probably will subscribe, and I kind of hate myself for it because you gotta, and that's actually what you're saying, Jill, is you vote with your wallet. So now I may not subscribe to every tier, but if they're doing a half-assed decent job, and I want to see movies, I'm gonna support them. So, and hopefully a year is enough time for me to for this wound to heal.
Well, yeah, this is what I was thinking. I was like, I'm never gonna support this. And my husband was like,
Yeah.
I think you're gonna sleep between now and then, and you're gonna see that they're gonna have X, Y, and Z available, and you're gonna freak out. So, yeah, he's right.
We'll see. So, what about you, Princey? Do you think you'll support it at all, or do you have no idea?
Oh, I hold a grudge.
I believe it.
My list of boycotted companies is very, very long, and so I'm like, no, you're dead to me.
Okay. Well, hey, there's this pizza place in our neighborhood that had a racist owner who everybody boycotted, and he said sorry today. So yeah, I'm not equating Warner with pizza or racism. Yep, Jill's about to fall over, but yeah, a quick apology is not going to make it all go away. I think so. But do they care? That's the big question. So,
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I'm just one person, but I mean, like, I've been through this before, right? Because I jumped on streaming right when it started, and they had so many great films. Like Netflix and Hulu and places like that would have, these really rare, cool films that have never been released on video. Like,
yeah.
I saw this weird little World War II movie called Circle of Deceit on Hulu. It's never been on DVD, and that's all gone. That's not happening
They've been
anymore.
phasing those out, and Netflix used to have a lot of classic film too, and I don't. You probably can count on your fingers how many there are before prior to the 1950 now. So.
So I just I just kind of feel like I've been through this before. I'm tired. I'm going back to my DVDs now. Thank you, you know.
We said we were going to be positive. I think we've just been bitching for an hour, and I'm fine with it. So, not quite, not quite.
It's been a rough week.
It has the thing is, we love film and we just want to see it. I agreed.
Yes,
Agreed.
So, how do you think? I'm not even going to get into the state of film discourse today because I think this week has it's been another.
So what did my note say, Aaron? It said it's a complete shit show. So that's my comment on it.
I'll say not everywhere. So,
Well, I'll say positive. I'll be positive.
okay.
I'll say that one thing about the film discourse that I'm really enjoying is the growing number of women that are part of the conversation with classic film and these sort of, niche
Great
topics
point.
that just, and I've read so many just amazing articles. Like, I have to give a shout out to Angelica Jade. Her writings on classic film are just, if she publishes one, I click immediately, And so there is this really like these exciting voices that are adding to the conversation. And, sure, there are some, fuddy-duddies or people who resent the attention that FilmStruck is getting, or, feel that, that there has to be some kind of conflict between fans and academia, which, of course, is ridiculous because so many academics are film fans, and they're
And they
wonderful to
love
talk to.
FilmStruck. They love Fandor. They I think.
Well, it meant access for their students. When I was in college, I took a couple film classes, like English film classes, just for fun. And they would have the lab screening where you went to the one lecture hall, but it was always at a really odd time. And so if you couldn't make it, you could go and rent the movie at the video store or whatever. But if there was one copy for
Right,
however
yeah,
many students. And so
right.
I have a
That's a great
couple
point.
of one of my great friends, he was using it to teach in his media classes because it was like, okay, here it is. Just,
I took film classes prior to any, well, a lot of streaming, and they would put the one film on hold at the library, and these 30 students would have to alternate. And guess how that worked? Well, you probably can guess how that worked. One of them, well, one of them would just make it available for everybody else. That's the way it worked. I discourse, sometimes it's fulfilling. I love what you said about the female voices, and the one thing about curation is, and I don't know if you all have read Alicia's book from last year. It was a fantastic book about not just female voices, but about all other different voices. The discourse is nobody will listen to my mansplaining anymore. But no, I don't need to mansplain anything. The thing is, you can't make Hollywood something that it wasn't. So you had this long period of time, 50 something years, where it was dominated by men. However, what was not what you don't know, and what's coming to light now, is there were some female filmmakers. There was some influence. There were some people that would needle at the system, that would put homosexual themes, even in silent film. I'm sure you've seen this plenty, Fritzy. Pre-code film for sure. Jeez.
Well, the Early Women Filmmakers box set that was just
It's
released,
great, yes.
like for example, they actually have two films that deal with birth control and abortion at a time when birth control was illegal. They have a couple of films that deal with, oh my gosh, just it's I'm still kind of processing it because it's such an experience. It's absolutely marvelous. So, yeah, these stories are coming out, and like in the silent era, what's nice is that you don't have to look in the shadows quite as much because,
There are a lot of female,
And also they had the African American film industry, which was never really in one place, but they had them working out of Jacksonville, Florida, Chicago, Detroit, Philadelphia, places like that. So, it is there, and Also, I've been really embracing Latin American cinema of the silent era, and I've just been blown away by just the variety and the talent. And so it's not like, just because you enjoy Ernst Lubitsch, you're suddenly not supporting these independent films or something more unusual, because, it's like we can multitask. It's not this zero-sum game where, any love for one thing means less for another. It's like, no, I love Cecil B. DeMille silent films, and I also love to go searching for, the one Bolivian silent film that survived, and I think that is one problem in the film discourse, is that people tend to draw lines where none actually exist. And all film fans are complicated. Like, someone can love really deep films or really unusual films or non-commercial films or independent films, and also go see every single Marvel film. We can do
I
this.
hate watching them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we can also, I mean, we all love classic movies, and how many of them are really problematic? I mean,
You have to.
almost all of them have something in it that is not okay with today's sensibilities. But it's okay to watch something, and you're educated about what's going on with it, and
There's
that it's not
context,
a
right?
true. Exactly. So, it is possible. Yeah, I remember a friend saying to me, I'm a huge Frederick March fan. That's like my whole research, writing, everything that I'm doing right now is on him and his wife, Florence Eldridge. But I'm also a huge Cary Grant fan. And a friend came up to me and was like, she gave me a Cary Grant gift, and she saw all these, it was like Cary Grant paper dolls or something. And she was so happy to give me this because she thought it was like my A number one actor, and he's up there for me. But then she sees these posters and things in my house with Frederick March in them, and she was so offended. Like, how could you love, like, and I said, well, it is possible to enjoy the work of many people and to be, a rabid fan of like more than one person. Like, this can be done. So it's the same thing, is I can go and enjoy the most popcorn, brain dead fare that's offered today and be able to watch, some a pre-code. It's possible. And you know
They're
what?
not
I can
mutually
No,
exclusive.
and I can do a double feature and be so
Easily.
happy.
Let me hit on one of your points, Jill. So those more we don't have to abide and accept the rules of we can accept that history and America have had challenge for 50, 60, 70 years. They haven't always treated men are well, no, actually men have been just fine. They haven't always treated women and other minorities, other races. So we can, we can watch and we can judge, or we can, we can judge and we can watch it on its own terms. But again, I think the curation, the restoration part is find the things through the cracks. And I think the example of the women filmmakers and the African American film filmmakers, I didn't know, I'm into film. I didn't know all those existed. I knew about some of the early women filmmakers, but not to that extent. It was kind of revelatory. And so again, if you want to support these kind of films, go buy that box set. You know, Kino is actually doing some really good work right now.
Oh, they're doing fantastic work. And also, I want to say, the late David Sheppard really led the charge on a lot of releasing a lot of really rare stuff, because when I first got into silent films, I got his box. I believe he curated this Origins of Film box set, and it had a disc of women filmmakers and a disc of African American filmmakers.
Interesting.
And like, it had Within Our Gates on it. And I like to say that at that time, you're hearing D.W. Griffith is the best, D.W. Griffith is great, just ignore the racism. And,
Forget about that Klan
just ignore
flag.
that.
NBD.
And so, and when you first start, it's confusing. And so I think that set like saved me from falling into the cult of Griffith, because you cannot watch Within Our Gates and then watch Birth of a Nation and look at it as anything other than, I mean, not that I was going to love it anyway, but it just the contrast between the two films was so striking, and Michaud's direction was so direct, and he did not pull a single punch. And it was such so important to hear that voice at that time that and so thank goodness that was put out on DVD, because it just like once it just like cleared my vision and led me on my path to being a really anti-Griffith
Well, and that's that. You don't have to agree. You don't have to. I'm never going to watch Birth of a Nation again. Sure, it
person.
was. You have to. Looking at film history, it did influence people. Right or wrong, it has its merit. I don't have to like it. Riefenstahl was a phenomenal filmmaker. Worked for a very problematic, to say the least, regime. But I did watch a.
That's a good way to put it.
Should I be the? I don't think I need the decorum for Nazis. They're a bunch of
Yeah.
assholes. But Olympia is a very good movie, and Triumph of the Will, is a very good movie. I'm not gonna go watch Triumph of the Will tonight. I'd rather watch this cheesy popcorn movie. But and then there's other films, even classic Hollywood. The way they had these, like the Stepan Fatchett character type of character. He was an extreme, but there's a little of that in, even like My Man Godfrey has a little bit
Oh
of.
yeah.
So anyway, I Oh wow. What a week,
Yeah,
huh?
the yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, the main thing I say when you've got something problematic is acknowledge it, acknowledge the damage it did and or continues to do. And, that's the main thing that I want to do, because you'd be amazed how many people, even young people, don't want to acknowledge that. And it's like, if you can't do that, then I don't see where the conversation can start, to be
Well,
honest.
actually, good point. I don't know if you've seen BlacKkKlansman. So,
Oh, I read the book.
you did? Okay. Well, have you seen the film yet?
No, I actually read the book because I heard it was going to say some things about D.W. Griffith, and it did.
Yeah. So it's in the movie too, and actually, there's some clips of Birth of a Nation in the movie. But the thing is, you can co-opt that and use it to make a statement, and it clearly does. Well. Y'all are awesome. Can I just say that? Thank you for this week. Y'all have been just killing it on Twitter. And like I said, I haven't been on Twitter much in the last couple years. You can probably guess why. But Jill, your manifesto is good. Did you get it?
It blew up my well, and someone prominent just retweeted it again right before we started recording this,
Yep.
and so I looked down at my phone and I've got like 300 notifications. So it's
Sweet.
still living on. So
And what's
and I got quite a few new followers too. So they're gonna be really disappointed because.
No. You're a fantastic follow. Well deserved. And you probably, I don't know if you're in our groups, but we were talking about you too. Our Facebook groups, just because I think that the type of demographic that goes after the Criterion Collection, it's like 95% male. But when we say the not all men, these are not the bro-man cinema. So people were very, very high-fiving you, Jill. People
All
were, yeah,
right. Woo.
so yeah, they were being female splain, and they loved it. And the thing is, so I was thinking about your notifications, because you went on this. It was like 30 something tweets, was it?
Yeah,
So
something like that.
I liked each one of them, and I thought about this because I use Twitter. I liked them so I could know where I was at. I was marking my place. So you got 30 notifications just from me reading your stuff. It's
Yeah, it
great.
was a lot. I had to turn my phone off for a little bit because it was like da 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 da. So, which I loved it. I mean, I wanted. I don't want to say I needed to see that, but I wanted to, especially given all the fallout over Filmstruck, to see that people feel the same. And so I was like, all right, yay, people. Because film Twitter, well, Twitter in general is a, it's tough. And then film Twitter has its moments. I mean, Fritzy was talking about, like, you know, Angelica Jade, and she's a great writer. There are bright spots on film Twitter with Farron Nimme and Sheila O'Malley and, you know, Matt Zoller-Seitz and Jason Bailey. So there are some great voices out there who are, you know, tempered in their responses and can embrace the old and new way of thinking and be actually modern and feminist without going, it's all bad, burn it all. So there is a pot. And so I got to see that good pocket of film Twitter in
For
action this
sure.
week. That made me feel a little better about just the general terrible state of things.
The thing about films or about film Twitter is just about Twitter in general is that it's almost like the Wild Wild West. Like
Oh yeah.
you know, sure, you probably had a lot of support and it was probably very comforting. You probably had a few assholes that the joke is the people in their mother's basement. You don't know where they're coming from, but there's always
There's
going to be.
always at least one, always. And in Twitter, it's like there's always like 100, you
So
know,
what's
there's
weird, just
always.
given the whole politics of last year, but I've crawled back over to Facebook and I'm in my echo chamber. So yeah, and I kind of like it, and I think we're in one right now, and I kind of like this one.
Passive aggressive echo chambers. That's like where, you know, where I love to be.
Yeah, nothing's going on in the world, is it? Y'all are lovely. Okay, we have this segment called Piece of Flair. So let's end on a high note. This is just something that we are into that we're digging, and I have actually on my little template I have Criterion or Filmstruck related because we've been covering Filmstruck on this podcast for a couple years. So I guess I'll have to change that. But Fritzy, what have you been into lately? What's a piece of Flair?
Well, I'm going to have to be shameless a little bit and do a bit of a self-plug.
Be shameless. Movie
I will be
silently.
shameless. I will be shameless. I was able to crowdfund the release of a complete, authentic 1917 Night at the Movies on DVD
Sweet.
and from Edison, from the very last year of Edison's production. It includes the feature four shorts. Ben Model did the scores. He did an amazing job.
Ben rocks.
Christopher Bird in England, he's a director and an editor, and he did a gorgeous job restoring what we think the tints might have been. And so it's on DVD now, and I'm working on my next one. I can't say what it is yet, but it's pretty cool.
So I feel terrible. I missed it because as you remember, I used to blog and I used to be on Twitter more. So I just miss a lot. Did you kickstarter this or?
I did. I kickstarted it and
Wow.
it was funded within a day.
Wow. So I'm good friends with Ben and he has his Kickstarters. Actually, he hasn't done one in a while, a little while.
I
But
think
there's a
he's
market.
It's fantastic. Because what it is we all know that these things are not going to get out on their own. And so it's like bad or good, whatever it is, we're doing a dive. And because I picked out this program sight unseen, it's just that I had the ads showing that this is exactly what was released in 1917 from Edison, and Library of Congress had everything. So sight unseen, I got the films and was able to launch the Kickstarter, and everyone had a good time.
You're curious. You're bringing movies out, and so is Ben. When Knighthood Was Flower was a great a Kickstarter. So next time you do one, let me know, please. I will be a
Oh, sure.
I'm gonna pledge. I'm gonna commit to you right now. I'm gonna pledge the benefactor.
Oh,
So,
wow. Thank you so much.
yay!
Thank you so much. Oh, yeah. It's been great.
So that's and I know you have a Patreon too. I think that. I think we have to support each other, and I think if we want these things to come out, sure. I didn't watch When Knighthood Was Flower day one, but I support the initiative or the endeavor. So Jill, what's your piece of flair?
So I'm actually going to talk about my friend Benjamin Reuter. He used to live here in Atlanta and was a projectionist. And he, about, I guess, th maybe 3 years ago, he moved up to Chicago. And he works at the University of Chicago, I believe. But he has a nonprofit called Enjoy the Film, and he just got a storefront in the Woodlawn neighborhood in Chicago, and he is setting up essentially a screening space, but he's also to bring the focus back onto actual film projection. He does preservation on his own. He's
Awesome.
actually, I have some film reels of some Frederick March movies, on brand for me. He's done some cleanup work for me on those. But he's trying to do like a Saturday morning cartoons program. There, he will do private screenings. But his main mission is educating people about film preservation, projection. He will show you how to run a projector. He will, if you're looking in the market to buy one, he will help you find one. So it's all
That's
about
great.
bringing the focus back. And I know that he's done some work with Ben Model and Tommy Staes and all of these like scrappy. And so, Fritzy, I need to put you in touch with him because he's great. So all these scrappy indie, collectors and archivists, he's in that same camp. And so Ben has a Patreon to kind of help. He's the screening space or the storefront that he has. I'm going to try to go see it in January. I should probably let him know that, but because I'll be up in Chicago. But he's really, I mean, this is some front lines, very small scale, but front line film preservation and access. So Benjamin Reuter, enjoythefilm.org.
And I'm going to put all these links in the show notes, so you can go either
Great.
go to the webpage or just, well, it's so tough to click these notes in your podcast player, so go to the webpage. Well, mine is completely left field. I don't need a self-promote because you're on my show. Thank you. I watched a double feature with Lynn Ramsey, so that was my that was my post film struck. Well, post. I haven't had film struck for a couple months, but. So I watched We Need to Talk About Kevin and You Were Never Really Here, trying to catch up on some art house new releases. I really like her aesthetic. I really like Marvin Collar and Ratcatcher. And what's funny is I saw those when they came out. I didn't really think of those as female filmmakers, even though I knew who she was. But now I think because of the conversation, we do think about female filmmakers and draw attention to them as we should. I think we're all for. More diversity, go Hollywood. Thank you. That's an inside joke. So very stylistic. I think I prefer. Well, You Were Never Really Here is a little more challenging. I think it's not as clear of a narration. Whereas We Need to Talk About Kevin is about a situation and it goes back and forth between timelines, but it tells a story. Whereas You Were Never Really Here is a little more. Atmospheric, a little more existential, more. I mean, they're all character driven, but more just kind of getting in the head of the character. But she really is a gifted filmmaker. I actually prefer her early work. I say that a lot. I don't know what it is, but their early. I'm not saying she's a sellout. She's amazing. But yeah, definitely seek those out. I think You Were Never Really Here should be in the conversation for some of the top films of the year. So yeah, and We Need to Talk About Kevin's pretty awesome too. Where can we find you online, Fritzy?
I'm at moviesilently.com and on Twitter at moviesilently. So pretty simple.
Jill, where can we find you online? Or do we already know?
Yeah. So it's the retroset.com and then I'm on Twitter as Biscuit Kitten, because that's one of these days I'll have like an actual like professional handle, but yeah.
The
So
Biscuit Kitchen kitten is not professional.
Let's just say I get some weird comments
It
sometimes
should
on
be at the head of your resume. So,
that.
yeah, actually, that was a bad point to make this week. Sorry. Biscuit Kitten on Twitter. Great, both of you are great follows. I can't keep up. I almost called you Twitzy, Fritzy. You've been a great follow for years, and a dear friend, even if we haven't talked all the time. So I'm glad we can finally have you both on the show, Jill. Here's to keeping on with Frederick March. who knows what'll happen with Filmstruck. I think there's got to be some project at TCM that will come up. You're needed out there. We need you on that
Oh,
wall.
thank you. Thank you.
All right, thanks so much for joining.